Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to those of you who know that all of the world's religious organizations and institutions, political institutions, economics, and military institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I am Yad. Our number, if you'd like to join us, toll-free, 877-376-45. I have said many times that this current pope is an absolute idiot, that I'd be surprised if he has an intelligence that would even approximate to normal. He is the dumbest man probably to hold that position in a very long time. And yesterday I said that he was to give a speech where he would be aligning himself with communists, with socialists, with those who wish to create a new world order where rich countries and rich productive individuals within rich country are forced to forfeit their earnings and their savings and to give them to those in poor countries. And that is the entire debate on global warming. That is what it's about. It's not about cooling the earth, because the earth is not warming. It is not about climate control, because man has no ability to control climate. It is not about this notion of man-made global warming, because it is not occurring. And even if it was occurring, there is nothing man can do to change the process. Carbon emissions in the air can have the effect of warming and cooling, and they have been at times 500 to 600%, even 700% higher than they are today. And they've been that high at periods where humans didn't even exist. So this notion that humans are responsible and that humans can solve this problem is poppycock. It is part of global warming and cooling is part of cycles that run approximately 600 years. We ended a cooling period in the 1850s to 1870s, and we began a warming period. During that warming period, initially it began as it has begun for millions of years previously, with a gradual return to baseline temperatures before beginning to rise above the baseline. But this time it was halted. It was halted for a number of reasons, none of which we seem to understand, all of which disprove the doomsday predictions that scientists who are funded by those who would seek to have a one-world government under either fascist or socialist norms, where from each according to their ability to each according to their need, is followed on a global basis. All of the Pope's remarks affirm that he has joined this discussion because he is a socialist, because he wishes for the world to engage in a one-world government where he would play a role and where money is taken from those who are productive and given to those who are not, with he and his church playing a role in the middle. It is what they have always done. So Pope Francis, here's the story, demanded, he didn't ask, because he's in a demanding sort of a guy. He's the Lord of Roman Catholics, after all. His name, Pope, means father in Latin. It's a term that the Caesars bore for centuries before he applied it to himself. Demanded swift action on Tuesday to save the planet from environmental ruin, urging world leaders to hear the cry of the earth and the cry of the poor. The earth is an inanimate object. It cannot cry. This flowery notion is from a person who's supposed to be teaching people about how to find God. Of course, he's pointing them all in the opposite direction away from him. Is just nonsense. I mean, it plays to the socialist, secular humanists, the environmentalists, who view the earth as our mother. The earth does not cry. And the poor are not crying ever, have never cried, are not crying as a result of global warming. The poor have cried in the past as a result of global cooling. To a large extent, the Dark Ages were dark because it was a period of global cooling. The period in Europe that caused so much death and destruction during the plague, during the Black Death, was exacerbated because of the fact that there was famine. And the famine was directly attributable to global cooling. We were in a period of global cooling. It was called the Little Ice Age. Crops failed. Production diminished because of the cooling. And a plague, which still exists today, all of a sudden became deadly where before people could fight it off. But they were malnutritioned and couldn't. And so the people cry as a result of cooling periods, not as a result of warming periods. So this has nothing to do with history, nothing to do with truth, nothing to do with science. In the first papal document dedicated to the environment, he called for decisive action here and now to stop environmental degradation and global warming. You know, even those who are at the lead of this economic change in the way that the world is governed, don't use the term global warming anymore. I've said this man's a moron. I mean it. Global warming is not a viable term because of the fact there has been a hiatus in global warming. And all of the global warming predictions said that, you know, that the polar regions would be ice-free during the summer as a result of this trend by this time. And yet during the last 2 years, the northern climes, both in lakes and also the northern Pacific and Atlantic, have been more deeply clogged with ice than any time in recorded history. Their predictions have all failed. There is no global warming. There should be, but it has nothing to do with man. He went on to say that global warming, he said it's mostly man-made. When in fact, that is the weakest link in their entire argument. Because global warming is something that has occurred for a very, very long time. It is something that occurred long before man even existed. And during man's existence, over the past 4,000 to 5,000 years, we've gone through many of these 600-year cycles of warming and cooling, all of which took place before man began to burn carbon, wood, or any other fuel source. And so this notion that it's an industrial problem because of internal combustion engines and the like, and the burning of coal, is nonsense. These patterns have existed long before man existed, and long after man, before man began to burn these kinds of fuels. In the speech, which was called Be Praised, of course in Latin, Laudato Si, praise be is actually the term praise be. Praise be for what? Who is he praising? Mother Earth? Is he turning Mary, the Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God, into Mother Earth? On the care of our common home. Our common home. You know, there is a home that somebody who would speak for Yahweh would address. It's the covenant. That's the common home that God provided for us. If there is a home on earth, it's not the whole earth, it's Yisrael, the very place that this Pope wants to give to those who are most opposed to the chosen people, the Muslims. Francis advocated a change of lifestyle in the rich countries, steeped in a throwaway consumer culture and an end to obstructionist attitudes that sometimes put profit before the common good. Like I said, he's a communist. That's what he is. He is positioning himself and his church as part of the new world order, a world order predicated on socialism and redistribution of wealth. He wants to blame the rich, as do all liberals. He wants to enrich the poor, as do all liberals. Francis urges these richer nations to make changes in their lifestyle, changes into energy consumption. No, we don't. He doesn't want changes in energy production. No. It's an unprecedented destruction of the ecosystem, he says. Environmentalists hope the message will spur nations ahead of the UN climate conference in Paris in December. Pope Francis writes, "We have come to see ourselves as her lords and her masters, entitled to plunder her at will. Oh, the earth has now mother. Her? Yeah, her." He didn't say the earth. He called her her. He wants to give the earth the same perception as do environmentalists. She's Mother Earth. Oh, my God, we're plundering our mother. We're raping our mother. We're lords. Boy, he ought to know all about lords. At least he knows what a lord is, that a lord is the master. A lord is entitled to plunder at will. Because guess what? The lords and masters of Roman Catholicism, as Theodosius established it in 400 CE, with the lord and serf conditions that would plunder Europe for 1,000 years thereafter, the plunderers of the poor, is Roman Catholicism acting as lord, empowering lords. So they know who they are. They know who lords are. And, of course, none of this has anything to do with God. He criticized what he calls collective selfishness, but says there is still time to stop the damage, calling an end to consumerism and greed. Oh, yes, as communists, we don't want consumerism and we don't want greed, not unless it's our greed and then us positioned at the top. We will get what we want. We will take what we want. But the rest of you, you aren't entitled to be consumers. You aren't entitled to be greedy. What's in your pocket belongs to us. You see, we have no shortage of money. It's just that it's in your pockets, and we want it. We're greedy, but you can't be. Yesterday, as I contemplated the idea of this fraud known as Pope Francis, this utter moron of an individual, complete hypocrite, giving an address on the environment when his church is being eaten alive from inside in moral decay, with priests not only committing acts of pedophilia, the worst of all crimes, but covering up that act at the various highest levels. It struck me that the reason he was doing it is because he is a socialist, a communist, and that he wants to position himself in a one-world government because he wants to lord over the world. He wants to be to receive funds, to be able to collect funds from the world and distribute them as he sees fit. And so he wants to be the leader of the world. And the only way to do that is to align oneself with the rise of socialist secular humanism. And so that's why he gave the speech. It's the only reason he gave the speech. It's to position himself and his church in the center of a one-world government where productive individuals are robbed and unproductive individuals are given entitlements, where they become ever more dependent on the very leaders in church that provided them. But in this speech, he has confessed to the crime. He says, once more, we need to reject a magical conception of the market. He says, we need to reject capitalism. We need to reject free enterprise of market economics, he says, which would suggest that problems could be solved simply by an increase in the profits of companies or individuals. While I said the man was stupid, I did not think he would be so stupid to tell us directly, anyone with their ears open, their minds open, that he was making this statement on behalf of socialist secular humanism, as opposed to the environment. Hello, Glenn, what do you think?
yada, yada, yada. You are still in denial of the fact that your automobile is responsible for the melting of the ice caps on the moon to Mars. Which
yes, that must be.
But he's not stupid. He's wicked and he is brazen. And he'll surrender any Catholic doctrine for the sake of the agenda.
Yeah, you will.
I mean, they're...
That's right.
Yeah,
Catherine doctrine has never mattered. I mean, they would surrender anything for the growth of their institution and its control and ability to fleece individuals.
Oh yeah, and the duplicity and the lies and stuff are just when you compare the encyclicals and papal bulls to what they say in their media and stuff, it's just one big mess.
Here's the institution that imposed the lord serf feudal system on an entire continent for 1,000 years, and he's talking about lords plundering the earth.
Right now, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, and I'm careful not to get caught up. For years, I wrestled with this fascist versus communist Hegelian dialectic, and I cut through it now. I cut to the chase. I just cut through it now. And speak strictly of totalitarian oligarchy, because no matter what lipstick they're putting on what pig, it always boils down to totalitarian oligarchy.
Correct. That's correct.
Yes.
You know, but a totalitarian oligarchy, I know that we're getting into semantics here, but it is a socialized system of control and of governance and of economics that has fascist componentry, and that the oligarchy, the oligarchy infers correctly that it is the rich and entitled, the super landowner and the bankers of the world, if you will, that control everyone.
Right, and they've got it deliberately all mixed up and befuddled. Like, well, first of all, I also boiled down this thing down to this soundbite. When government dictates to business, it's communism. When business dictates to government, it's fascism. You know, so they'll speak of socialism. Look at Obamacare. It sounds very socialistic. But what do you get? You get fascism with a bill written by insurance companies who are lining their pockets and getting filthy rich while the people go without care. So they promise socialism and then deliver fascism.
Yeah, it's kind of a blend of both.
Yeah,
there's an enormous amount of wealth redistribution. In fact, the basis of Obamacare, the whole economics are wealth redistribution, so that's socialism. But private ownership of the means of delivery is fascism. So it is a blend of these things. It's always been a blend of these things. And this Pope is positioning himself and his church to play a major role in a totalitarian government,
leading to world depopulation. Ultimately.
Correct. Of course. Yeah, that's the result is going to be, and it's always been, the more totalitarian a government becomes, the larger it becomes, the worse it is for the poor. If he gets his wish, the poor's plight will be far worse. I'm a little embarrassed, Glenn, that I didn't see it. You know, I have known for a long time and have said for, better part of 15 years now, that the New World Order is going to be a blend, and as will be the Torahless one. He's going to blend Roman Catholicism and Eastern Orthodox Christianity at large, with Islam and socialist secular humanism to control the world through a oligarchic or fascist lord-serf economic order. And so I've seen that for a long time. But I didn't know really how was Roman Catholicism going to engage in all of this. And the answer was always right before our eyes. How did Roman Catholicism start? The founder of Roman Catholicism is not Constantine. It's Theodosius. Theodosius is the one who made Christianity the official state religion of Rome. Constantine lived his entire life as a pagan. There's no sign whatsoever that Constantine did anything other than allow Christianity to exist amongst other pagan religions. But Theodosius imposed the religion. And with it, he imposed the lord-serf feudalistic structure that would plague all of Europe for 1,000 years. So it was always there. Pope Francis is simply returning Roman Catholicism to its roots, to its fundamental beginnings.
Right. The city on seven hills, the seven heads with the 10 horns. And we now, yes, you know, they've got their, yeah, their 10-region world government plan. You'll have your 10 neo-feudal lords,
right,
the 10 regions.
Right.
You know.
So what you're now seeing is the way they're going to integrate. He's going to integrate as a socialist secular humanist into this mix, as he uses that as a guise to impose the old feudalistic fascism that Rome used to build the church and control Europe for 1,000 years.
And I'm a little concerned about how exactly they plan to advance the agenda here in September with this Pope's visit to the U.S., addressing Congress, coming here to Philadelphia for some World Family Conference thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you put this together with some of the people squawking about this September 23rd thing, with the French foreign minister standing there with John Kerry talking about 500 days to avoid climatic cataclysm, and that 500 days takes us right to this time period when the Pope's, you know, it
of
just
course.
Looks like they're going to advance the agenda somehow significantly at this point.
Yeah, I'm personally disgusted that the U.S. Congress would allow this man in his religious garb and all of his religious paraphernalia speak to a collective House of Congress. I mean, I think it's repulsive.
But they've allowed U.S. officials and military leaders to be knighted by the Queen and stuff like that. You know, apparently they've forgotten the separation of these entities.
Yeah.
To be separate from these entities. We right. fought and worked real hard to not be under their thumbs and their heels.
And I understand that there's a subtle nuance that the Pope claims that he is the sovereign of a nation state, the Vatican. But, you know, that's all of that is just to impose a kind of a corporate shield over Roman Catholicism. It's like people incorporate because that shields them individually from litigation. Well, the incorporation as a sovereign entity gives the Roman Catholic Church a shield, an immunity towards prosecution, towards investigation. And so they're using that shield to parade as a world leader as opposed to a religious buffoon.
Right. And the other geographic entity that's similar to the Vatican is the City of London, financial district in London.
Mm-hmm.
And the District of Columbia has similar structuring, but not as powerful. But they, you know, so yeah, there's all these games. They love to play games. And so it's just, but when you look at the Torah, Prophets, Psalms, you look at Revelation, you look at, you know, this sort of thing. This stuff is so evident, you know, or you look at what's going on with Islam and, you know, the U.S. supporting ISIS. I mean, it's like the writing's on the wall that eventually Assad's going to be, you know, displaced, and then Iran will be the last significant Shia entity before it's subsumed. And then, you know, then you'll have this, like, ISIS, you know, as a big player in this militancy of the Islamic Caliphate. I mean, it's just
it's exactly. I mean, you're going to have an Islamic Caliphate. You've got that. You've got Roman Catholicism now trying to blend with Islam and with socialist secular humanism. And you've got socialist secular humanists now fawning over the Pope and bringing him into his fold, in their fold. So, yeah, it's all coming together exactly as we should have expected.
And we see Israel is like a fire pot among sheaves and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at Israel, you know, I sort of long for the time period when it seems to me there's going to have to be sort of a great reform and repentance in Israel. They've got per capita abortion rate is horrific. Tel Aviv is a gay mecca. You know, this all of labor Talmudic Zionism is going to have to give way to a more Torah-based, you know, a resurgence of Torah-based Judaism in order for
it. It will. I mean, I think I don't know Torah-based Judaism, but I think that that Israelites by just through fear and for no one else to turn to are going to ultimately return to the Torah and to Yahweh. And they will only do so, though, after that is their only option. They'll rely on their military. They'll rely on their politicians. They'll rely on the United States. They will rely on everybody until everybody abandons them and fails for them. And they'll finally turn to Yahweh.
And then, pray tell, who is engineering that?
Yeah, that's right.
Yahweh himself.
Yeah. As you hear, speaking of Yahweh, and those in opposition to him, these last few days we've been doing a review of Shaul, and the original Shaul is a prototype for the Shaul who became Paul. And it's interesting that they found in Israel, made the announcement yesterday, a piece of pottery that dates back 3,000 years, and it has a name written on it. And the name that's written on it, in Paleo-Hebrew, by the way, the name that is written on it is the name of Shaul's son. And you know what the name of Shaul's, and it, the son's name, by the way, is provided in in Shamuel. So Shamuel tells us the name of Shaul's son.
Okay, you got me.
Ishbael.
Oh, okay.
Individual of Baal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ish can be viewed one of two ways. It can be viewed as individual, or Ish is the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light, but feminine manifestation of light. But well, the Isha would be feminine. Ish would be masculine in terms of light. So it'd be it's either the light of Baal, Ishbael, or individual of Baal. So this man's son was named after the satanic wannabe god, the Lord.
How are you getting the Baal, the L from the L?
Well, it's the name Ish. It's Ishbael, and it's not L as in Almighty God. Baal is Baal, the name of the that Yahweh, the name and title Yahweh applies to the adversary Satan.
So this
name is Ish, and Ish is most often, the way that it's written, is most often the light of. So it's the fire of, the light of. Ish, it would be the masculine. It's not Isha, so it's the masculine. So it's the light of can even be translated the husband of, or sometimes even married to. But it's typically the light or the fire of Baal.
And it's the son of Shaul.
This is the son of Shaul, yes, Saul of King Saul, the one that
King Saul, yeah,
Yahweh said to by choosing them, they have not only rejected me, but they have estranged themselves from me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's interesting that he would name his son after Satan.
Yeah, wow. Shaul.
It's also interesting that the name Satan certainly applies to the whole thing that this Pope is complaining about, which is people lording over the planet, and then him besmirching the Lords, when in fact his church did more to advance the concept of Lord than any institution in human history.
Speaking of historical finds, I'm sure you've come across this. It's quite common for atheists to assert that the archaeological data, you know, do not support the notion of, glory days Jerusalem with the Temple of Solomon and all that sort of thing. Are you familiar with those types of allegations?
Yeah, and of course, every archaeological dig in anywhere in and around Jerusalem provides absolute proof to exactly the opposite. And it is the reason why the socialists typically side with the mythical people known as the Palestinians and the Muslims, which besmirch all archaeological investigation, because archaeology demonstrates that the Quran is faulty to, you know, just ridiculous. It's a laughingstock. And that the Torah is precisely accurate, is what the archaeology proves with every stroke. And so they do everything they can to preclude it, but every investigation thus far shows exactly the opposite.
The reason I bring this up is it makes it hard for John Q. Public, listening to the media cacophony and the contradiction, hearing these allegations, and that without, you know, access to primary source information or even any sort of source information, to know who's telling the truth when you hear these radically different assertions. Yeah. You know, and then, you know, they'll put it like, oh, yeah, the old thing, the conventional wisdom was, oh, yeah, the old... you know, convention was to go to the Middle East with a shovel in one hand and a Bible in the other, and then, you know, say that, you know, or they'll talk about the crazy things like named by, like, the mother of Alexander the Great and all the false, you know, historical sites and everything. Oh, yeah. So it really is a tough mix for the average person to find out the truth about.
Yeah, but, you know, the fact is that in the last 10 years, there have been all sorts of written inscriptions that talk about Yahweh, talk about King David, talk about Jerusalem. And so the world over, archaeology is proving the story is accurate. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. You know, it's interesting. I was looking at the names of Shaul's four children. The first one was named Yahweh Nathan, which is the gift of Yahweh. And it's Yahweh Nathan, so we get the proper pronunciation of the Wah in Yahweh's name. The second was Malak Yeshua, which would be messenger of salvation.
Morning.
The third is Abi Nadab. Abi is fathers, and Ab is fathers. And so, you know, it's kind of a way of creating this this idea of father of fathers. And then the last one, you know, because he was under Yah's protection and enlightenment and empowerment for much of his life. But then he became possessed by Hasatan. And his...
which is terrifying when you think about it.
Yeah, is Ish hyphen Baal. And Ish, in this particular case, would either be individual of, but more likely, the fire of, the light of Baal, the light of Satan.
That one gift of God is remarkably similar to Netanyahu.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the first one is it's just the other way around. Yahweh, this would be Yahweh Nathan, Yahweh gives, and Nathan Yahu would be the gift of Yahweh.
Yeah. And so he believes. But
you're kind of breaking up there, Rev.
I made a mistake. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're breaking up, but I would tell you, Glenn, the thing I would say is that this is a subject that I spend a lot of time researching in terms of archaeological evidence affirming the historicity and the accuracy of Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalm testimony throughout history. And Yahweh got all of his details correct. And it's just astonishing how many details have been provided to us. And every time we dig, we find affirmation of them. And so this notion that there is no legitimacy to a kingdom of Yisrael with a capital in Yehudah and Jerusalem, with a first king of Dode, David, is utter nonsense. I mean, it's chronicled by the Assyrians, it's chronicled by the Babylonians, it's chronicled by the Egyptians, and it's chronicled in pottery shards that have been unearthed and in stones by the Israelites, as well as by the Greeks and the Romans. And the evidence is overwhelming.
Well, and that's why... like the Noah's Ark and, you know, chariots at the bottom of the Red Sea and stuff like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear?
Exactly. And the people will laugh. The secular humanists will laugh and call it a fairy tale in terms of the Ark. And yet it's there for anyone to see. You know, you Google Earth. You know, it's very close to Lake Van. And if you were to search for Google, it's the Turkish National Park devoted to Noah's Ark. And you Google it, take you right to it. You can look right down on it. You can read all about it in Ron Wyatt's literature. It's obvious.
Yeah, Charles, right. I don't, though. I wanted to correct a huge mistake I made in the last segment. I meant to see the mother of Constantine, Helena, who was responsible for the delegation of a lot of the incorrect historical sites in the Holy Land and all. I mistakenly
was an incompoop.
Alexander the Great, yeah.
Yeah, she was an incompoop. There's no question about it. I mean, almost everything that she did was misguided. And
right.
So, those people who go to her sites and thinking that they're doing something that has some affinity with God, they're nuts. It's just nuts. I mean, everything associated with Roman Catholicism, with Constantine, with Theodosius, with Rome, with popes, with Caesars, with cardinals, with any of this, is as ungodly as anything could possibly be. You want to piss God off? Then you start supporting Roman Catholicism.
Right. It's like to say, you know, I understand Yahweh's going to fulfill his covenant with Israel. But, like, ultimately, I see the place I really want to go to is, you know, simply, you know, the place that he has gone to prepare. Behold, I go to prepare a place for you.
That's where I want to go. Absolutely. And, oh, by the way, you're going to look like a rose again on your prediction that this would be the summer of our discontent. Greece is going to default. They're not going to bail out. They're not going to give it a grace period. Greece is going to default.